Right. Today, I want to discuss the concept of what is known as glatt, or glatt kosher meat, or in Israel you might see the term chalak, and one or two other issues that also can affect the kashrut of meat. You may have heard from people who tell you that they're more machmir when it comes to meat, and that they'll only eat mahadrin meat, and perhaps they will use standards that are less strict when it comes to other things. Is there a basis for that? That's what we'll discuss here. Oh, but before I do, just one thing I need to clarify from last week's shiur. I said something last week that I realized afterwards was slightly inaccurate, so I just want to correct it. Last week I gave an overview to the various halachot that apply to animals, and I explained that after you shecht an animal, as opposed to a bird, when you shecht an animal, so there, one of the things that has to be done before the animal can be eaten is nikur. You have to remove certain parts of the animal that are usher, the chelev, and the gid hanasheh. And what I said at the time is that removal of the gid hanasheh is very difficult. That is true. And I said last week that there was an Ashkenazic minhag not to do it and simply to refrain from eating that entire part of the animal. I've subsequently saw an article by a man named Rabbi Dr. Ari Zivotofsky, who lives in Beit Shemesh, who some of you may know. He's a very interesting guy with a lot of interesting interests, one of his many interests in life is that he's a shochet. I saw an article on the OU's website, actually, by him, in which he corrected that a little bit. He says it's a common misconception that apparently I was under also. First of all, it's not only Ashkenazi communities that didn't do it. Some Ashkenazi communities did do it, some Ashkenazi did not. And there were also Sephardic communities that did or did not. So the distinction between Ashkenazim and Sephardim was not accurate. And furthermore, according to almost all authorities, there was never really a minhag not to do it. It's just that some communities refrained from doing it because it was simply not practical or necessary or worth it for them financially. And other communities did. The bottom line is that today, in Israel, there are menachrim who are able to remove the gid hanasheh. You can get the hind quarters and the filet mignon in Israel. In America, it used to be impossible to get. I believe it now is possible in certain places to get, even kashrut mahadrin. And in any case, if it's done by someone who knows how to do it, then it's beseder. So I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, now to today's topic. So first of all, the term glatt is a term that has been colloquialized and has been turned into, a general term for like kosher mahadrin. Okay, you can say you can get glatt kosher ice cream and glatt kosher chocolate, and that term doesn't really mean anything. Maybe it means kosher mahadrin, which is a term that we already pointed out at the very beginning of this course doesn't really mean anything either. In theory, right? In theory, this thing is permissible. It's not permissible. But the term kosher mahadrin has come to mean, in questions when there's a machlokes, that we take the stricter opinion or whatever the story is. But I want to discuss the literal or more technical meaning of the term glatt, which is a Yiddish word or its Hebrew equivalent, chalak. And I want you to understand what it means when you say that meat is glatt or isn't glatt, and also what the term chalak beit yosef or beit yosef glatt, what that term means, and how that should affect decisions that you can make about whether you should or shouldn't eat such meat. In order to do this, we have to return to a halacha that we mentioned somewhat briefly last week, and that is the concept of treifa. I think I said last week also the term treifa is another term that has sort of been colloquialized. Already back in Yiddish that happened. And treif means, colloquially means anything that's not permissible, but the actual meaning of the term treif refers to a very specific iser. Last week we read the pasuk, basar basadet treifa lo tochelu. So here I gave you some selections from the Rambam. Let's start with source number 1 on the sheet. The Rambam in Hilchot Machalot Asurot, Perek Dalet. I started with Halacha Aleph in that Perek, just so that you can get the background. Halacha Aleph in that Perek, if anyone's missing a source sheet, we have extras up here. The Halacha Aleph in that Perek discusses a different Isur, not the Isur Trefa, but the Isur Nevela. Okay? Ha'ochel kezayit mi basar behema shemeta. O chaya shemeta, o ov shemet, lo ke, shenema lo tochlu kol nevela. V'kol shelo nishchita karaui harei zo meta. Okay, so the first halach is, or maybe it's the second halach. We said the first halach is that if you want to eat an animal, it has to be a behema tahora or an uf tahor. It has to be an animal that is from a species that's permissible. And no matter what you do to a pig, it can't become permissible. Or a horse, for that matter. Right? But if you have a cow or a goat or a sheep or a chicken or a turkey, well, turkey we said is a bit of a machloket, but we hold turkeys allowed also. So the only, it has to be dead for you to eat it. And the only way it can become dead and become permissible is through shechita. If it dies through any other method, natural or otherwise, including a shechita that went wrong, a shochet who messed up during the shechita, which happens to everybody,
then
it's a nevela. And nevela is asur. Okay. That's a background. Now, we skip to Allah Chavav in that same parak in the Rambam, and he continues. Ha'ochel kezayim is basar behima uchaya uof torim shenit refu loke shenema uvasar basadet treifa lo tochlu lakelev tashlichonoto. That's the pasuk. Again, uvasar basadet treifa lo tochlu lakelev tashlichonoto. That's what the Torah says. The Torah says you have basar basadet treifa, and in a minute we'll define that term. Lo tochlu, but rather lakelev tashlichon. Instead, you should throw it to the dog. And that second half of the pasuk teaches us a number of things. First of all, it teaches us that treifa, like nevela, is not asur bahana. It's mutar bahana. It's no problem to benefit from it, including to feeding it to your dog. It's simply asur bachila. But what is treifa? So the Rambam continues. Treifa ha'amura b'Torah. Zo she tarfa ota chayat haya'ar, kigon ari v'namer uchayotze behem. Okay, so the literal meaning of a treifa in this pasuk is that it was attacked by another animal, like a lion or a tiger or a bear. Oh my, right, something like that, which attacked it. V'chein of she tarfa ota of hadares kigon neit. Also, a bird that was attacked by a predatory bird, like an eagle or something, or a hawk, which are birds that attack other birds, a predator. That's what treifa is. But the Rambam continues, we have a problem here. What does that mean? Ena tayachol omar, continues on, treifa oto ve'emit oto. It can't, because then it would be a nevela. She'emet arei nevela. What happened? A wolf attacked the sheep and killed it, and now the wolf didn't eat the whole thing, left over some of the carcass. So maybe you think that that's what the Torah means when it says uvasar basadet treifa lo tochlu. The Rambam explains that can't be what that means, because I don't need this pasuk to teach me that it's usher to eat the carcass of the sheep that was killed by the wolf, because the carcass of the sheep that was killed by the wolf is a nevela. We already said an animal that's dead and that died through any means other than shechita is nevela. So this animal that was killed by another animal is already asur due to nevela. And you're not telling me anything by telling me that if it was killed by another animal, who cares if it was killed by an animal? Or if it was shot in the head by a hunter? Or if a boulder fell on it and killed it? Or if it died of a heart attack or old age? In other cases, it's a nevela. So that can't be what this means, the Rambam explains. And therefore he continues. He even says what we just said. Umali meta machman atzma, ohi kabasaya fehmita, o shavra ari vehmita oto. Who cares if it died by itself through natural means, or if it was attacked by a sword, or if it was attacked by a lion? Who cares? Either way, it's dead, and it's a nevela. Ha'enu medaber elek b'shenitrefa v'lo meta. And therefore, what must we be talking about? We must be talking about an animal that was attacked by another animal, was nitrifa, but didn't die. If it's dead, it's a nevela. So it must be that there's an animal that's alive. And it was attacked. Vim hatrefa shelo meta asura. So then he continues in Allah Chazayim. So then maybe we should say the following. Yachol im ba'ze'ev v'garar ha'gedi b'raglo b'znavo b'ozno v'radaf adam v'tzilo mipiv ye'asur sh'arei nitraf. Maybe what the Torah is saying is that, let's say it was attacked by another animal, right? A wolf attacked the sheep, but it didn't really do much damage to it. It caught the sheep. It caught the sheep in its teeth, but it hasn't really killed it yet. And I am the shepherd, chase the wolf away. Right? Like David HaMelech said, he saved his sheep from a lion and a bear. So let's say that happened, right? Maybe that's what the Torah means by trefa. It means an animal that didn't die at all. But once it was attacked by another animal, maybe that itself turns it into usur, even though no damage was done to it. The Rambam says that can't be. Because Talmud Lamar, the Gemara, the Pasuk says, Basar basadet trefa, lakelev tashlichan oto, ad sheyaseh ota basar haruya lakelev. On the one hand, it can't be that the animal's dead. Because if it was dead, it would be an usur anyway because of the nevela. But it also can't be that the animal's completely fine because the Torah tells me that I'm not allowed to eat the trefa. What am I supposed to do to it instead? I'm supposed to feed it to a dog. How can I feed it to a dog if it's still alive? That doesn't make sense either. So what must it be? Halamadita Shehitrefa Hamurabatura Hisha Tarfa Oto Chayatayar Vishavrauta Vinatalamut Vaadayin Lometa. So we're talking about a case where the wolf or the lion did attack it. He didn't just catch it. He attacked it. And it was in the throes of death. It was dying from being made into a trefa. But what did I do? Afal pi shekadam mishachta kodim shetamut harezo asura mishum trefa. Ho'il vi'i efshar shetichye mimakazo haba'a aleha. So this must be the case. The animal was attacked by another animal to the point that it was about to die from its wounds. And I saw that, and I said, oh no, this animal's about to die from its wounds and it's going to be usur. I want to use the meat. I run over while it's still dying, and I shecht it before it dies. No, we said it because I was telling you, I'm just developing this now so you can see.
I'm saying it's different.
I mentioned this last week, if that's what you mean. But what I was mentioning was this Rambam. So right, I ran and I shechted it. So in theory and in practice, I saved it from becoming an avela. That's the Isser Trefa. That must be the Isser Trefa. It's not an avela because it's shchuta. It was shechted. But it's a trefa. Nimtzeit lomar halachachet. Shetara asra hameita vihi nevela. The asra hanotela mut machmat makoteha. So that's what a trefa is. If it's dead, it's a nevela. And if it's going to die, and the only reason it doesn't die is that we killed it first through shechita, so that's not a nevela, that's a trefa. And that's asur. And in halacha tzad, I underlined it for you in bold. This is the bottom line. Mikana muchachmim zaka kol she'ein kamoha chaya trefa. Any condition that an animal in this condition cannot live for more than a short time is considered a trefa. Okay. So now we know the concept. Question is, how do we apply this concept? In the case of the Torah, right, that the animal was attacked by a lion, and I managed to chase away the lion, and the animal is in the throes of death, and right before it dies, I managed to shechet it, so it's clear that that's asur. But what about cases that are less dramatic? What if I have an animal that was hit by a car? And the animal is okay. It's walking around. It's, you know, seems to be okay. I don't know what's going on in terms of the internal organs, if it was really damaged or not. In the meantime, we shechet it. So what would you say about that? Well, what would you say about...
What if an animal has a disease
or some other kind of defect? Exactly. So here, yeah.
Aren't there certain animals, I'm making this up, maybe it's a little bit too extreme, whatever, but aren't there some diseases or wounds, whatever, that an animal could have that he could live for a very long time?
For sure. For sure. This is not a din, you know, for a korban, there's a concept of a mum. Right? There's a concept that there are certain things that make the animal blemished and imperfect, but perfectly healthy. Those animals might be possible for a korban, but you're allowed to eat them. Exactly. So it's not that if this is not a textbook case of, you know, a classic perfect animal, you're not allowed to eat it. You're allowed to eat the animal if it's deformed. An animal that has three legs, you might be allowed to eat. I don't know. Right? Or something like that. The question is if it's going to be considered a trefa. Actually, three legs, I'm not sure about three legs. Whatever, but
it's
in principle.
You don't know what
like. Exactly, exactly. Now, just give me one more second, because I'll take questions, but if you let me go a little further, maybe allow this to be clarified. So, on the one hand, if we have objective reason to think that maybe the animal was injured or is ill or deformed in some way that could threaten its life, that's one issue. We also have a different factor. Okay? And source number two, you have the Rambam in Hilchos Shechita, where he discusses this as well. But he has one very important point here that he adds. Okay? Kfar Biyarno, I'll read from the beginning. Kfar Biyarno, Hilchot Yisuri Machalot, that's what we just read a minute ago. Sha Trefa Ha Murava Torah Hi Ha Notel Amut. Velo Nemar Trefa El Shidibera Katu Behoveh. Kigon Sha Trefa Aryeh Vechayot Sebo. We already explained that the concept of trefa being attacked by another animal is really only one example. It's not only that case. It's really any case where the animal is going to die soon, and we shecht it first. It's called a trefa. V'yesh. Now look at halacha bet. This is what's important. V'yesh sham chalaim acherim im ye'aru la techashev trefa v'hein halacha lemoshe misinai. That's the key point. There are a list, and he gives you Shmona Mine Trefot, Nemrula Moshe Misinai Ve'eluhein. Jerusa, Nekuva, Chasera, Netula, Psuka, Krua, Nifula, Shvura. I'm not going to go through all of them now. But the point is this: there are certain defects that are halacha Moshe Misinai. In other words, a veterinarian's opinion of whether an animal like this is capable of living for a long time or not might be relevant only lechumra, not lekula. If a veterinarian or some other expert, could be a farmer who deals with animals, you know, professionally his whole life and knows this stuff or whatever, if someone who is an expert and says this animal with this condition was going to die soon, that might be relevant lechumra to turn into a trefa. It won't be relevant lekula if the animal has one of the things that are halakhically defined as a trefa. Misinai. And even if a veterinarian says this animal could live forever, it doesn't matter. Halacha l'moshe misinai, these eight defects are considered trefa, no matter what. And the one that concerns us here is nekuva. Okay, one of the objective definitions of a trefa is that the animal has a hole in certain of its internal organs. If there's a hole in one of the internal organs that's included in this, then nekuva. It's a nekev. It has a hole. So, for example, if an animal has a hole in its heart, even if you get an expert opinion that this animal, this hole, this type of hole in the heart, isn't life-threatening or whatever, it doesn't matter. Halach l'moshe misinai says that that's considered a trefa.
It's not very hard to find that. You don't have to check it, right?
Unless 1 second. And then one more halacha, and then I'll stop and answer questions. Just one more halacha, okay, because then we're going to zero in. I mean, the laws of trefot in general are extraordinarily complicated and are only understood really by people who are experts in this particular field. You can't even learn it really from the Shulchan Aruch. You have to go, you could sit with the Gemara Chula and the Shulchan Aruch and learn it from today to tomorrow. If you don't go and actually open up dead animals and start feeling around and be trained on how to do it.
Have you done that?
No. I don't pretend to know this stuff. Almost no rabbis know. You can study some of the theory behind it, but you have to really, this is a specialty area, just like Milah, just like Shechita itself, just like Safrut, how to write a Sefer Torah. These are special skills that certain people learn, and you have to learn it from somebody who knows how to do it. So just one more second, and I'll take all the questions, okay? Source number three, which is already the Shulchan Aruch, is also very, very important, and it provides us with a backdrop to zero in on the one important issue that I want to discuss with you. Ein tzarich livdok achar shum treifot min hastam chutz min haria. Ria is a lung. That tzarich livdok bebehema v'chaya im yesh basircha. V'chol ha'poreitz geder le'chol b'lo b'dika yishchenu nachash. Which is based on a pasuk in Mishlei. It's a very harsh condemnation. What he says is the following: with the exception of the lungs, which we'll get to in a minute, you are not required to check. Meaning, when I told you before about an animal that was in a car accident, and there's reason to suspect that there might be internal damage, if you check that animal, then you will be required to check. Because that animal, I know that there's a reason to think that this animal might have a problem in its, you know, in its heart or in its stomach or in one of the other organs. But if there's no particular reason to think that, it could be also that I found a flock of animals that all had a similar disease. Once that I may have to check all the animals in that flock. For example, I read that in America today, they also check part of the animal's stomach, even though the halacha doesn't seem to require it, because apparently the way animals raise today, in certain places at least, it's common for them to swallow nails or something like that that can cause trepha inside, and therefore there are certain things that are checked. In chickens, certain places they check certain things that because of the way we raise animals today. Right, so if you have information, hold on, I'll take all questions in just one more minute. Okay, if you have information, either information about this particular animal, or about the flock of animals, or just the general situation of animals in this country, or the procedures that are done to them, or something like that, that leads to a real safek that there might be a problem, you have to check. But in the absence of that, we have the right to rely on, here's a term we used, I think, last week, we have the absence to rely on the chazaka. Was that last week or two weeks ago? Okay, chazaka. An animal is presumed to not be a trepha. Most animals are not trepha. You saw it was attacked by a lion. You saw it was hit by a car. You know that the whole flock, many of them had a disease. Okay, then you can't rely on the chazaka because you have a reason to suspect something specific and you have to check. But in the absence of anything, you, as far as you know, this animal is perfectly healthy. You don't have to check except for the lungs. The lungs always have to be checked, says the Shulchan Aruch, because regardless of any information to the contrary, because the lungs is the one type of trepha that's common enough that we don't have a chazaka. Again, it could be, and in the United States today, they feel that there's no chazaka on the stomach either. They have to check that. But that depends on the time and the place and the circumstances. The lungs always have to be checked. And what are you checking for? You're checking for two things. Certainly, if there's a hole in the lung, then it's going to be a trepha. That's for sure. But also on the animal's lung, you can have something called a sircha, which is mentioned here. A sircha is usually translated in English as an adhesion. It's sort of like a scab or a scar.
It's not a cancer.
It's not a cancer. A lesion or an adhesion. It's like a bit of like skin or tissue that's, yeah, sort of like a scar or a scab that forms on the surface of the animal's lung. And the concern is that is concealing a hole. In other words, what happened? The animal developed a hole in its lung, and the animal's body tried to compensate for that by sort of creating this natural patch over it, but it would still be a trepha.
Interesting that it would still be considered a hole, even if there's a patch.
Yeah.
Because apparently the patch doesn't really work, meaning it doesn't really cure the animal. It's a temporary thing, but the animal's... This is still apparently a fatal injury.
Okay.
Or at least it's enough to halakhically consider it nekuva.
And there's a warning.
Oh, that's exactly the machlokas about glot. Exactly what we're going to get to. But first, I promised to... So that's the background, okay? The background, and then I'll stop for questions and then we'll continue. The background is just sum up what we said till now. There's an issadaraita called trepha. Trepha is an animal that would have died if we didn't shecht it first. There's trepha that's based on, you know, sort of objective observations, and there's also certain types of trepha that are defined by the halachas trepha halacha noish misinai, even if we don't think it's necessarily going to lead to death. One of those is nekuva. If an animal has a hole in an organ, it's considered a trepha, and we don't need any expert opinion about it. It's a trepha, it's halacha noish misinai. You don't, however, have to check. In most cases. Most types of trefot, we assume, unless we have reason to suspect, we can rely on the chazaka that they're not there. The one exception to that is the lung. When you shecht an animal, not a bird, by the way, only an animal, when you shecht an animal, you must check the lungs to make sure that they don't have sirchot. If there's a sircha, then we are afraid that the animal is mikruva and would be a trefa, and that's as far as we've gotten. Now I will stop for questions. Yes, Nami.
Is it a chumra to check the animal and to check for the other organs, or is it a chumra that if you find something in the other organs, you don't have to eat it?
I know what you mean by chumra. If you find a trepha in any of the other organs, then
you don't have to check it.
You don't have to check it, but you happen to see it, for example, then it's absolutely necessary to eat the animal. Period.
Okay.
If you find that the animal had a trepha in it, then the animal is prohibited. And in fact, I heard about a case that happened once in a slaughterhouse where they discovered a trepha. I'm sorry if this grosses you out, but there's no way to discuss this stuff without it. The animals had already been butchered. You know, they had already cut them into pieces. And particularly they had cut off all the heads of the animals and put them in one place. Okay, and the heads have at least the tongue that people eat. Okay, and then they found the trepha in one of the animals. And they didn't know which head belonged to it. The whole animal is a trepha.
They had to throw everything.
So then there's a whole question. At that point, there's questions of bitul. Okay, so that's already a whole. But that was the shiloh. All these heads now, one of them is a trepha. We don't know which one. Okay, so that's the point. If you discover that it's a trepha, that's not a chumrah. If you discover a trepha, then the entire animal is asur.
Do you know what the psak was?
I don't recall what they did.
They just take the tongue and put it
in. Let's see if it fits. That's cool.
That's what I was saying.
What?
What if he fits a bro?
I don't like him.
That's what he was saying.
Okay, I don't know about you, but when I eat a steak, it usually no longer has a head on it.
No.
Okay.
I know it's not for him. I pretend it's something.
Okay, you can pretend whatever you want. Now, just 1 second. So that's in terms of that. Checking the lungs is also not a chumrah. Checking the lungs is required.
Yeah.
Okay? If you would decide to check other things, stam, that would be a chumrah, and it's a chumrah that the halacha doesn't require. I'm not aware of any opinion that says, stam, go check the animal. There are certain parts of the animals that certain posts can feel in a certain time and place need to be checked. But there's no opinion out there that says you should check every organ in every animal. We don't do that.
Let's say I have a herd of sheep, and I'm checking them, I find a hole and it's hot, and then I find one hot. The rest of them, do I have to make sure?
It depends. It depends on the circumstances. But once you create enough examples of it that there's reason to suspect that the whole flock is infected, then yes. And there are times, by the way, that what will be done nowadays. There are times that if a shipment arrives at a slaughterhouse and they start noticing a problem with a couple of the animals, they'll send the whole shipment back. Sell it off to Goyim as non-kosher meat. We're not going to deal with it.
They will.
Yeah, it's much about now. Yes, you'll have it.
So, let's say, are you going to like treat right? A wound like inside the body, or if you like a sheep broke its leg, you know, heal and it'll be okay?
Either. It could be. Those are the different trefa that are listed there. Like some of them are internal, some of them are external.
But if it breaks, let's say, on the heel, then it's for another.
So then you have to study all the laws of trefa. Right? To know what's a trefa and what's not. Exactly. Yes, Ellie?
Can you do like a full body check on an animal before they shock it?
No. I mean, they do...
How would they know there's a hole in the heart?
I just explained. You don't have to assume that. You don't have to check for that. You can rely on the chazaka that there isn't.
But what about, like, how do you know if there's, like, something, I don't know, wrong that you don't...
You have the right, since the vast majority of animals are not trefa'd. With the exception of the lungs... And with the exception of anything else that you have reason to suspect, okay, you are not obligated to check. You have the right to assume that it's not a trepha. If you happen to notice a hole in the heart, then the entire animal is a trepha. Okay, but you're not obligated to check the heart unless there's a particular reason to suspect that. You have the right to assume that it's not a trepha.
Second question. You know I said Nadeel and trepha, you're allowed to have hana'ah
from? Yes. The main example in Hilchot Kashrut is Basar B'Chalav.
Okay,
which we will get to.
Animal that, with no milk at all, this is an animal you can't sell.
I mean, not as a type of animal. If the animal was worshipped as a Avodah Zarah, it becomes Asar Bana. If the animal killed another animal, Shor and Niskal, whatever.
You just said now that if...
There are things in the Torah that are Asar Bana. Chametz and Pesach is Asar Bana. I didn't say one. I said once there's enough reason to suspect the whole flock.
So let's say, in fact, the whole flock wasn't a problem, and a different one of the sheep, the flock, I don't know what the word is, animal from the flock had something wrong with it, you're not allowed to get.
You are allowed to get enough from it. And that is what is done. In every kosher slaughterhouse, a certain percentage of the animals wind up being non-kosher, either because they were found to be a trepha, or because the shochet messed up the shechita and it became a trefa or it became an avela, and therefore those animals, they don't throw them out and lose the money completely. They sell them on the non-kosher market to goyim. That's what they do.
Not my question. My question is, I know you whether any kind of animals are not allowed to sell, you might accidentally start selling off without realizing.
Not really. No. No. Ricky.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I forgot for a second. For the hole in the internal organ, it's any organ?
No, there's a list of organs.
So we know that.
Yeah, you can look in the halacha. I'm saying this is 40 sifim in the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Treifos.
Also, the eight different...
Which I'm telling you right now, I haven't studied. I'm zooming in on this one issue.
Okay, so the other seven types, do we know what, like...
Yeah, they're all different. Hilchos Treifos is about 40 simanim in Yoridea. 30 simanim in Yoridea. Okay, they're all listed, and obviously people know them. The people that check your meat know them. In every slaughterhouse, there are people that are experts in these laws that check the meat, the bodek. I told you, besides the shochet, there's a bodek and there's a menakir. Right? The menakir is the one who takes out the chelev and the gidonash and a few other things. And the bodek checks for treifot. He checks the lungs, but he also is aware of knowing what other things, if they would come up, would be relevant. Okay? Yes?
Can women become shochet? So like
that's an interesting question. No, all right, let's not get into that now. Yes?
Really fast question, sorry. If they find an animal non kosher after he shechted, does that mean the bracha of the meal, the shechita, was a bracha of atala?
That's an interesting question. If you shechted the animal and found out to be a treifa, was the bracha on the shechita a bracha of atala?
But you didn't. How could that be a bracha?
The question is whether you were mekayim the mitzvah of shechita if the animal turned out to be a treifa. I'm not sure.
Isn't that the same thing? I'm
not sure. What?
Halacha wouldn't be formed that way if that was a...
No, you could say that it was a bracha of... Let's put it this way. If the shochet messes up the shechita, and he didn't do shechita in the end, so it was a bracha of atala. It was a shogeg. Fine, say that, but it was a bracha of atala.
But this isn't a sport.
So that's the question. The question is, did you makai the mitzvah shechita? I'm not sure. Can we... Yeah.
Isn't that the same thing as if you make a bracha on something that's sour and then you spit it out?
It's similar. If you don't wind up eating it, then it's a bracha of atala, right? Okay. All right. Now. Okay. So here's where we get to the big machloket, though. Okay, so now we know, and again, you and I are not doing this. None of us are bozkim here, but you need to understand this so that you can be an educated person when it comes to reading these two adult and saying, oh, this is glat, this is not glat, this is only Beis Yosef glat, what does this mean? Okay?
Yeah.
It sometimes does, or in Israel they use the Hebrew. The word glat means smooth in Yiddish, and in Hebrew that's chalak. Okay? Look at source number 4. Yesh Misha Omer. This is the Shulchan Aruch I'm reading, and then we're going to read the Rama. Okay, remember the Shulchan Aruch is the Mechaber, the Beit Yosef. He's the right Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, is also the author of the Beit Yosef. He's referred to as the Beit Yosef. Okay, so now you know something already about that term, and he's normally followed by the Sfaradim, the Rama. Rav Moshe Isserles is normally followed by the Ashkenazim, and they have a machloket here. So this is the beginnings of it. So let's take a look. Yesh mi she'omer shehabodek yachnis yado bevehima bizrizut belo rifyon yadayim ve'im nitparka shum sircha keshemachnis habodek yado motzi hareya lachutz ubodka im hi sircha. Okay, we'll skip a little bit. Ve'ein hakel b'kach. Okay, fine. Said there. Okay, the rest of it is not relevant to us. Okay, so what the Shulchan Aruch says is that if you, what happens is you check the animal when you check the lung when it's still in the animal.
This is the Beis Yosef.
Okay, he says you check the bodek sticks his hand in and feels the lung of the animal. You're all going to be vegetarians by the end of this class, right? Feels. Okay, so those who want, we're making a barbecue later, and those who don't want, double portions for the rest of us. Okay, so you feel the lungs of the animal, the bodek feels the lungs of the animal, and if he feels something that seems like it's a sircha, then the lung has to be removed and tested. And if in fact it is a sircha, then the Shulchan Aruch seems to imply that it is, not seems to imply, the Shulchan Aruch holds that it is then considered a treifa. Okay, so, Rega. No, the animal's dead. You do this. The bedikah takes place after shechita. After shechita, we open up the animal. We want to find out what was the condition before the shechita. No, what you're saying is an important point. By the way, there are certain things that can happen. For example, you can cut open an animal and you could find a hole and you're not sure if the hole was there before it was shechted or if the hole was made by the knife that opened up the animal. Okay? No, but the butcher who cut the animal open, maybe his knife slipped and it made the hole. If you had a case like that, and some of the halachas discuss cases like that, if you had a case like that, then you would rely again on the chazak. If it's reasonable to assume that this hole was made after the animal was killed, then it doesn't matter. Right? But if you discover something that was clearly there while the animal was... So the bedikah that's done after shechita is there to determine what happened before shechita. Your point is correct. Right? Once the animal shechted, it doesn't become a treifa now. But only now can we open it up and find out, right? If we open it up while it's still alive, we're going to turn it into a treifa. Right? Besides violating Tzar Bali Chaim. Right? If we cut open a live animal, we're going to turn it into a treifa, obviously. So we shecht it first, and then we check it. Okay. So the bottom line is the following, that the Beit Yosef, just let me... The Beit Yosef's position is that if there is a sircha, and again, the sircha was the thing that we suspect is covering a hole in the lung. If there's a sircha, that the animal needs to be defined as a treifa. Okay? So now you know what the term chalak Beit Yosef means. Chalak Beit Yosef. And this is what is required for Sfaradim who follow the Shulchan Aruch, is that the animal's lungs... Again, we check the lungs of every animal. In the lungs, we don't rely on chazaka. And we require that the lung be completely free of sirchot. If there are no sirchot on the lungs, then the animal will be called chalak. If there's a hole, it's for sure a treifa.
You can tell precisely.
If you see a hole in the lung, there's nothing to talk about. The animal's a treifa.
He's sticking his lungs in it.
And then he examines it visually afterwards.
I mean, he
feels inside to see if it is... Yeah, I think today, anyway, the lungs are checked twice. They're checked inside and again outside. They inflate them with air.
Oh,
but, okay, they do that. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, that wasn't exactly necessary. That's not the point. The point, what's really important, is that the Shulchan Aruch, maybe I shouldn't have read it inside because it's distracting us. He was describing the method of checking, and if you feel something, then you have to investigate further. The bottom line, though, is that according to the Mechaber, which is the Beit Yosef, which is what's binding upon Sfaradim, because they follow his Shita, they hold, Beit Yosef holds, that if there is a sircha on the lung, we consider the animal a treifa without any further investigation. If there really is a real sircha on the lung. However, comes along the Rama and writes, and if you read on with me, you will see. Hagah, v'yesh matirin, okay, what Yocheved suggested to do, v'yesh matirin limashmesh besirchot, some allow you, the bodek, to feel, to sort of rub on the sircha, ulema'ech bahem, to rub them. V'omrim, shesircha, a real sircha that covers a hole, im yim'ach adam ba kol hayom, lo tidatek, a real sircha, you could rub it all day long, it won't come off. V'lachem, and therefore, kol makom sheyitma'ech, any place that you rub it and it does come off. Let's say you rub the sircha and it comes off and there's no hole under it. It just comes off. So the Rama says, Yesh matirim to do this, tolin lahakea. Vomrim she'eno sircha el arir. Arir is a different thing which is permissible, not a sircha. Rir ba'alma. So the Shulchan Aruch said, if I find a sircha on it, then it's considered to be a treifa. The Rama says that some allow you to rub the sircha and see if it comes off. If it comes off, and there's no hole underneath it, then we assume, according to this lenient opinion, that it's not a treifa. And the Rama says about this opinion, va'af al pi shehu kula gedola, kvar nagu kol b'nei medinot elu, ve'ein limchot biyadam, me'achar sheyesh lahem al ma sheyismechu. He says, even though this is a really big kula, this is a huge leniency, nevertheless, it has become commonplace in Ashkenaz, and therefore, ein limchot biadam, yesh amal ismoch, and the Rama, you can see from his language that he's not 100% comfortable with it, and that's extremely important, we'll see in a minute. But, he says that this is a leniency that has been widely accepted in Ashkenaz, and those who rely on this shouldn't be criticized, and they can continue to rely on it. So that
is the beginnings of this conversation. An animal that's not glat, in other words, it has at least what appear to be sirchot on the lungs, according to Beit Yosef, is to be considered a treifa, and Sfaradim should not eat it. The Rama quotes a kula that he says was accepted in Ashkenaz, that we can remove it, and if we're able to remove it, then some say it's not glat, but this leniency holds that it doesn't need to be glat. This leniency holds that we can assume it's not a treifa, and we can eat it, and therefore the psak in the Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazim is that one does not need meat which is glat. Although the Rama, it makes very clear that he's a little bit uncomfortable with this leniency. He calls it a kula gedola, and he says, but it's become widely accepted, ein l'mechot biyadam. So therefore, for Ashkenazim who would eat meat that met this criteria, in other words, the animal had a sircha on the lung, or what seemed to be a sircha on the lung, and it reached a state that the Beit Yosef would have paskened it as a treifa, but the Ashkenazic bodek, or it doesn't matter who the bodek is, the bodek went and tested it and rubbed the sircha and it came off. So this meat, the Rama indicates a possible leniency, but the Rama himself indicates also that yesh makom lachmir, and perhaps it's better not to rely on that. So that's where you have the situation for Ashkenazim, that some Ashkenazim perhaps will eat the meat that's not glat, and others will say, I don't want to do that, I want meat that is glat. Okay, because the Rama himself said that this leniency is a kula gedola, and it's difficult to rely on it, but on the other hand, it's become accepted, and therefore you have the right to rely on it. So there's your two, that's the starting point. We're still not done, but that's the starting point of the discussion. Yes?
What did you say happens if you rub the sircha a lot and it still doesn't come off?
Then it's really a sircha, and even Ashkenazim would consider it a treifa. Yes?
Why is it not glad of my Ashkenazim?
It's not glad. Glad is a descriptive term. The lung was not smooth. It had something on it. Okay? So the term, it's not chalak.
Then glad just means that it...
Glad means the lung was smooth. Okay? This is meat that was not smooth. But we did a further test, and according to this further test, it seems to not be a sircha. The question is, do you rely on that further test? The kula is to rely on it. The chum is to say, no, it wasn't glad, I'm not going to rely on that. Okay. But what's chalak Beit Yosef? There's chalak, and there's chalak Beit Yosef. So this is a further complication. And here, I confess that even my limited understanding of this is even, on this next point, it's even less, I have even less of an understanding. But there are apparently certain types of very small sirchot that are very easily removed, that Ashkenazic tradition considers to still be glat. Meaning, according to the psak of the Rama, the kula, even if the animal had a sircha that could be removed, we paskin that it's not a sircha and the animal is mutar. According to the Sfaradim, if there's no sircha at all, that's the only thing you're allowed to do. But there's an intermediate level. There's a type of sircha that's very, very, and I can't really define it because you really have to be a bodek to understand this, and I'm not, but I've never even seen a shchit of an animal, let alone a bedika. So I'm just telling you really my layman's understanding at this point, which is that there are certain types of very small and easily removable sirchot that Ashkenazim will consider glat. In other words, Ashkenazim will consider this not to be relying on the leniency, but to be absolutely lechatchila, but they still don't meet the Beit Yosef's criteria. And therefore, basically, if you want, there are three levels here. Right? There's the Beit Yosef glat, which had no sirchas at all. And if you see on a tu'udah, a reliable tu'udah, the term chalak Beit Yosef, that's what that means. That means that this is kasher l'chatchila even for Sfaradim. If you see an Ashkenazi hashgacha that says glat or chalak, but doesn't specify chalak l'fi Beit Yosef, it might be glat according to the definition of Ashkenazim. An Ashkenazim could consider this kasher l'chatchila without any, you know, chashashot, but a Sephardi still shouldn't eat it. And then there's meat that's not glot at all, that had, that means it had real sirchot on the lungs, but they came off. Not just the small, easily removable ones, but the real ones, but they came off. And that's something that even Ashkenazim would consider kasher with the kula that the Ramah is somewhat uneasy with. Bottom line is that nowadays, in Israel, the Rabbanut will give a hashkacha to meat that is not glad at all, meat that certainly shouldn't be eaten by Sfaradim, and that Ashkenazim, you know, would be in this category of this kula of the Ramah. In America, and in many other countries, I don't know about all, but in America, for example, neither the OU nor any other kashrut organization today is giving hashgacha on meat that isn't glat. Glat, meaning Ashkenazi glat. For example, OU meat in America is all glat lefi ha-Ashkenazim. Now that's a change. That's a change from a tradition. In Europe, and for that matter in America, 30, 40 years ago, there were very respectable rabbis that were giving hashgacha to meat that wasn't glat. The change came about to a large extent due to socioeconomic factors. The ability to check the relative cheapness, is that a word, of meat, and the large non-kosher market that allows a slaughterhouse to sell off the animals, you know, without a tremendous loss. These things created a situation, and the fact that there are many people that want the glatt kosher, so that's sort of what led to this. Is that halakhic? The question is whether that becomes halakhically binding. So, for example, if you grew up in America, I'm telling you right now, in America, you probably never ate meat that wasn't glatt. So you come here to Eretz Yisrael, and the question is, can you rely on that leniency of the Ramah? I can't tell you that you can't, because the Ramah says that, you know, ein l'mechopi adam, and this is something that has been accepted for, you know, at least if you move here permanently, if you're visiting here, then perhaps if you say the minhag in America is not to allow it, then maybe you shouldn't. But at least if you move here permanently, I think you certainly have the right to rely on that. At the same time, this is the type of chumrah that, you know, has a very solid basis in halacha and needs to be, considered seriously. Two other points. I'm sorry, I'm out of time and I do need to stop. One more point about this. And then there's the second half of this sheet, the basar kafu, the frozen meat question, I didn't get to yet. I'll have to deal with that, I guess, next semester. But just one, one sentence just to explain what it is. Just one sentence about the Beit Yosef. There's an unfortunate confusion that many people run into in Israel today. There's a great Rav in Yerushalayim, who I'm sure you've heard of, named Rav Ovadia Yosef. And perhaps one of the greatest living halachic authorities today. He has a kashrus organization under his auspices, which is very, very widely respected, with very high standards. Unfortunately, he or whoever runs the business aspect of this decided to name the organization Beit Yosef, right? Badatz Beit Yosef, because it's Rabbi Ovadia Yosef Sashkach, his last name is Yosef, so they called it Beit Yosef. I say unfortunately because this causes tremendous confusion. I've had the situation more than once and more than twice where someone called me up from a restaurant, Rabbi Haber, is this Hashkach okay? And I say, well, what does it say on the Tudah? And I say, it says Beit Yosef. And then I have to start asking further questions. Are you reading me the name of the organization on the top of the Tudah? If you are, and you're telling me that this is Kasher B'Hashkachat Badatz Beit Yosef, then you're telling me this is under Rav Ovadia Yosef Sashkacha, and I think you can certainly rely on it, it's fine. But a lot of times that's not what the Tudah says. The Tudah has someone else's name on it. And in list of what it claims to be representing, it says the meat here is kasher lemahadrin chalak Beit Yosef, and they're not referring to Rav Ovadia Yosef, they're referring to the sheet of the Beit Yosef. Now that Tudah, it depends who's giving that Tudah. If it's from a reliable person, then it's an excellent Tudah also, but it also could be a Tudah, which unfortunately exists, from an organization that has no reliability, and the Tudah is meaningless, and they saw the term Beit Yosef, and they called me up on the phone, and I have to ask them all these questions to make sure what they're reading. Okay, so this is confusing, but just understand that. The term Beit Yosef, in theory, refers to Rabbi Yosef Karo, and on a Tudat Kashrut, refers to the Shita that we just discussed. If it refers to the name of the organization, it's a good organization. But don't confuse it if it refers to something else. Okay. The other point I want to make, I'll just mention in brief. Okay. The last sources on the page tell us that when an animal is shechted, It needs to be salted if you're going to cook it. If you're going to roast it, of course, you don't need to salt it. If you're going to cook it, the meat, it has to be salted, and that salting has to be done within 72 hours after the shechita. Because otherwise, it dries up and the blood cannot be removed by salting, only by roasting. This is a chumrah that does not appear in the Gemara. It comes up later on in the Geonim, but it's become accepted lahalacha. There is a serious machloket, though. What happens if you shecht the animal and you freeze the meat? Okay, and this is commonly done here in Israel. Most of the meat, I'm not talking about chickens here, most of the meat that's sold in this country, most of the beef, comes from South America. A small amount is shechted here in Israel, most of it comes from South America. So sometimes they shecht it and they salt it there. Sometimes they shecht it and they freeze it and they ship it over here and they salt it here, by which time it's many more than 3 days after shechita. The question is whether freezing the meat freezes that 72-hour clock or not. There are opinions, and I put it on the sheet here, Rav Avad Yosef is dafka mekil on this. Rav Moshe Feinstein sees the theory of being mekil, but says you should only do so lechatchila, and in practice in America he did not allow, you should only do so b'dieved. In America he did not allow them to do so. The OU had this shaila, I don't know how many decades ago, when they used to ship meat by train from Oklahoma to the East Coast. It used to take more than 3 days.
Is it ruined if you salt it first and then freeze it?
No, but just because economically it's cheaper sometimes to do the salting here. So I just want you to understand, this is another difference that will come up in Israel between mahadrin and non-mahadrin meat. If you see the term basar kafu, frozen meat, on the Tudah, they're not telling you that it's just not fresh and that, you know, whatever. That the term frozen meat refers to this. If you see the term, you might see on a package of meat, sometimes it says huchshar chutz la'aretz. They're telling you it was kashid in chutz la'aretz. You're like, why do I care? This is what they're telling you. They're telling you it was kashid in chutz la'aretz, meaning they're telling you there was kashid right after it was shechted, before it was shipped here, and that's a positive thing. In practical terms, these issues usually go together. They don't have to, but meat that's glatt is also going to have been salted within 72 hours of shechita, not relying on the freezing. Meat that's not glatt might have that other leniency being relied on. Neither of these issues applies to chickens, only to meat. In theory, the 72-hour issue applies to chickens, but in practice, all chickens in Israel are slaughtered in Israel. They're not imported, so this issue doesn't apply. Okay, that's the simple answer, and it's time for Shir Chloe.